Hello, Merry Christmas, and welcome to The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, here for our Christmas episode.
Merry Christmas.
Our first Christmas episode. We have been doing the show for almost a year. Can you believe it? 08.
What a year.
Wow.
Yes. Oh, wait. That's a lot of episodes, people. So thanks for hanging with us. It's been great. On today's show, we're going to be talking about, we're just going to have fun in the roundtable and talk about favorites and least favorites surrounding Christmas. So, and then we're going to go and like pick who our favorite and least favorite person in the room is to spend Christmas with.
That's great.
This season. We're also going to talk to, we're going to air our Casting Crowns interview related to the album Peace on Earth, just because it's Christmassy. John Thomas will be doing The Hungry Years, and our inbox question is involving being overshadowed in a room if you're not quite as social, not quite as beautiful, not quite as anything as someone else in there. I didn't even write that one. So anyway, stay tuned for that. That'll be coming down the pike. So, but here we are. This studio is completely gray. We didn't even decorate it, which is lame. Whatever.
Matt's got a red tie on.
Oh, you do. That's so festive. Can you put that on the table so we can all share it?
Teddy's wearing his snowman pajamas. So.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, Teddy is with us here in a little, that's not as snuggly. It looks like some yuppified version of, what is that?
It's the Ergo baby.
Whoa. Yeah.
It's a total California thing. In fact, the demo video, they have the guy with the hoop earrings, and Steve's going to have to get his ears pierced if he's going to wear this thing.
But, yeah, it had all kinds of granola falling out as we opened the package. Instead of being packed
That's
in peanuts,
right.
It was styrofoam granola.
I'll bet, yeah. And if you, like, buy four, you get a free pair of Teva sandals or something.
Hey, it works. He's sleeping.
Oh,
these are
that.
Sweet sleep sounds you're
that
hearing.
That is so ergo. That's awesome. Okay. Well, let's talk about, we're going to jump into just our Christmas memories in the way of favorites and least favorites. And we're just going to, one of my actual gifts is the gift of asking people questions about their favorites. And I have the favorites game. I know, it's amazing how stuff like this dovetails and you can benefit from
it. Is this the only gift we're going to get from you, Lisa?
It may be, yes.
Oh, honey, let's return.
I ask people questions like, what's your favorite? And I do it on trips, too, like with my family. And then sometimes I make them sing it so that you have to be like, what's your favorite? And then you come up with a category and everyone has to answer.
I think we've talked about this before on the show.
It's possible. I don't know. I can't remember. But it is a blessing for everyone involved. So we're going to talk about that related to Christmas this time around. And I want to start out with the common question that, for those of you who listened last week, remember, I also asked it of Mr. and Mrs. Claus. What is your favorite Christmas song or carol? Steve.
Oh, geez. Why are you starting with me?
Because you're just over there.
Good King Wenceslas. Because it talks about the Feast of Stephen. And I'm like,
right.
Yo, I'll take a feast. My name's Stephen.
That is so self-serving. I don't even support that. Wow.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, because that's everyone's favorite song.
I mean,
whoa.
That and Lo, a Rose Air Blooming. I mean, that's like... No,
nice.
You know, actually, at this time of the season, it's anything that you're not hearing in the mall or the store, because, I mean, those things are just driving you crazy. So, like, for instance, this past weekend, we went out to this Rockledge Ranch in town, and it was like an 1880s Christmas, and it's Christmas Unplugged. So anything that's over 100 years old and played with acoustic instruments at this time of year becomes my favorite, just because it's so stripped down and unplugged, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good. Candace.
I would have to say it was Winona Judd's Old Holy Night. I just love the deep resonance of her voice. But it's now the Josh Groban Christmas album, because I actually listened to that while I was in labor with Theodore. So
that's
now
special.
I hear those
Josh
songs
Groban.
And I just have all the emotions.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, and what about worst?
Because
I need a little Christmas.
Yeah, the Angela Lansbury big Broadway production of I Need a Little Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
you know,
song just goes on and on.
Pull out the hallway.
that's
whoa.
Pretty good.
That was a lot. That was
I'm
good.
Sure Angela would appreciate that rendition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent. Mott?
I'm going to have to go with my favorite Christmas album is Vince Guaraldi. Charlie Brown Christmas.
Oh, totally.
I could listen to that all year round.
That's good stuff.
Lisa doesn't like that.
Actually,
though.
Anytime it snows, that's a perfect.
Yeah. We
perfect
do pull
soundtrack.
That out when it snows in June in Colorado.
My favorite song is a new one. It's the legendary Hall & Oates. It Came Upon a Midnight Clear. That's just a great rendition of that song, which was written by a Unitarian Universalist back in like 18 something.
Wow. That's not good.
But it's good. I guess they were different back then because it actually has very good lyrics.
Well, yeah.
My least favorite song is also by Hall & Oates, Jingle Bell Rock.
Whoa. I was going to say, have they done it as a medley with Maneater?
Hey, you know, since awesome. Mott mentioned the album category, I do have to mention Elvis Christmas, because grew up in a house with big Elvis fans. My dad met Elvis and got to go to, you know, hang out in his private theater, and so our house was saturated with Elvis. So we listened to more Christmas Elvis than anybody else. And just hearing Holly Leaves and Christmas Trees makes me think about pulling the old artificial tree out of the attic and trying to get all the colors to match up on the stems. And so, I mean, that still just tears me up.
Well, Elvis, then my Christmas. Favorite album of childhood has to be the Letterman.
Whoa.
And that is, I mean, I don't think you can even buy that other than album. It's old.
Yeah. My sister loved
them. The 4-part harmony.
Where they're like wearing the silver jumpsuits and stuff. That's awesome. Oh, yeah.
No, they had the green and red sweaters in the one we had.
Oh, in that one. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, mine. We had them all.
Actually, my favorite carol is Hark the Herald Angels Sing, but you have to sing all six verses because it literally like tells the whole gospel, and I love it. And obviously the verse, you know. Okay, I can't even remember it. Whatever. I'm not even going to get into that.
It's okay.
Okay. That's my favorite, and I have lots of non-favorites, the Garaldi being one of the biggest.
You're the only person in America who doesn't like that.
I'm sorry.
First of all, I don't like jazz, which is why my other song, Santa Baby, I can't even stand it. Not even the Madonna version. No, not the Madonna version. And then, speaking of albums, one of my favorite all-time singers of all time, John Denver, love him. Also sang Please Daddy Don't Get Drunk This Christmas, which would also be up on the worst songs of all time list.
Yeah, so. The Grandma whole John got run over by a reindeer.
Album, yeah. Christmas
with
album
the Muppets.
Was bad.
Whoa, yeah. Not good, yeah. All right, let's talk about favorite Christmas movie. Favorite and least favorite, just go through. Steve.
Yeah, like the new Miracle on 34th Street. It's some, I think, fun improvements over the original. Even get in some prayer and some, In God We Trust type pieces that you're kind of surprised to see John Hughes slipped in. So that was neat.
Mm-hmm. Family Man. Mm. Yeah. It's sort of, I always forget it and then I go, oh, no, wait, Family Man. I love that movie. I love that he finds out what's most important in terms of family. Obviously, it's not a Christian movie, so he doesn't find the Lord, but it's just a precious story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a well done one.
I'm drawing a blank.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. Let me think about this.
How about
for
It's
a
Wonderful Life?
Could be.
Because
actually,
that
I should think. I think I should redo mine as It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, you should.
That is your favorite.
Can I redo mine?
Sure.
You won't even let us watch it till
or
Christmas
White
week.
Christmas.
I was going to say that. I know.
Okay, I love It's a Wonderful Life. That's just good stuff. I mean, for the longest time, I didn't watch the whole thing. It's kind of long, slow at the beginning. But, man, especially this year with the banking crisis and all the other things going on, man, it just hits home. That's good stuff. Although it's sad, depressing, tragic. But, I mean, that's what, you know, gives you such a good payoff at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll go with The Sound of Music.
Oh, that's great.
Don't they play that every Christmas or something?
Is it Christmas or Easter? I can't remember.
That's not a Christmas movie.
How about this?
A lick of Christmas.
How about Titanic? Don't they show that every Christmas?
No, wait a second. Is this favorite or least favorite?
I don't have a favorite. I'm
okay,
sorry.
How about White Christmas?
I've never seen it.
Oh, Danny Kaye, the dancing. It's
okay.
It's
okay.
No, because
Charlie
what's your
Brown
name?
Christmas.
Vera. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Vera Ellen.
Vera Ellen
has the
she
smallest
totally,
waist in
because
history.
She was totally anorexic.
I mean, her waist is like, was she really? Because her waist is
she
like
was.
16
She was anorexic,
inches.
And that's why she had to wear all the high neck stuff, because the neck is the first to go.
See, this is why I didn't watch that movie.
She did have high neck, the turtleneck.
I know.
Dresses.
They had to make her all the turtlenecks because she
knew that.
Was
she
anorexic.
She had the most amazing dance moves
I know.
Ever.
She was good, but she was also anorexic. My favorite is Little Drummer Boy.
Oh, no.
You are kidding.
The claymation.
Come on.
Love it.
That is the worst show ever.
No, I love it.
It names the wise men.
Okay, they I know.
That, it's just...
I know, but that, I mean, it's just so nostalgic for me.
The guy with the circus and the fake and then, tears that rolled down
then,
the clay.
You know, and then they had to paint the smile on him because he didn't want to be
there. Oh, that was good.
It was, that was moving.
What about the long-eared donkey? That was
Nestor. Do you know what? Nestor. When that aired...
And he just turned
around. I cried so long that my mom finally looked at me and said, stop crying. It's a show.
Okay, but it's not as sad as the Burgermeister Meisterburger forcing... What's he called at the time? St. Nicholas or whatever.
Kris Kringle.
To get out of town because of making toys. I mean, that'll
puts him
cause
in jail.
A tear. Yeah.
Claymation. It's where it's at, I'm telling you.
I mean, that was a nice little streak in the 70s when you had that. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, Frosty the Snowman. And
Rudolph. Yeah. All of those. I have that whole and, whatever classics,
okay,
Christmas classics.
My favorite series. Line from Rudolph is when they actually tell him, you can't play our reindeer games. I mean, as if we go around saying, you can't play our human games. Come on now.
That was good.
Or when Santa says, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, why don't you guide my sleigh tonight?
That's good. Well, they just had, you know, they had to get the script in, so they had to borrow some lyrics. So.
Oh, they used every slap one.
Oh, they did, yeah. Okay, favorite Christmas food?
Oh, that's tough. There's so many.
Haystacks, Steve. Go
oh,
ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Mention your haystacks.
Have you ever had the haystacks, Lisa, with the butterscotch, the chow mein noodles, and the peanuts?
Yes, and if you had read my blog post last week, I talked about them at my Christmas cookie exchange, where I had to eat a haystack to get through the conversation with the woman.
Did it poke holes in your mouth? Because that's
good.
When it's a good haystack.
Oh, it did. I don't know. I wasn't paying attention. I was just trying to listen to her and be helpful. So those are good. Those are very good.
I'd have to say my favorite Christmas food is a category. It's
what is that?
Anything chocolate with peppermint. I'm a big, you know, the combo, chocolate peppermint. So it could be cheesecake, it could be brownies, it could be fudge. Mm-hmm. Those two things together.
Okay.
Turkey.
Oh.
That's Thanksgiving, Mom.
Protein.
It's Christmas. What's that song? It's a song about turkey.
What? Turkey and Christmas?
Oh, yeah, that song
oh,
about
the, classic,
the Christmas turkey.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
Oh, the please put a penny in the old man's hat. If you
no,
ever got a penny.
No. A turkey and some mistletoe.
The goose is
I
getting
don't know
better.
What that is.
That's goose.
Turkey and some
Is it in The Little Drummer Boy by
no,
any chance?
No, Turkey and It's a Mistletoe. That's that's a lyric
turkey
in a Christmas
some
song. Famous.
Makes the season bright.
That's
right.
It.
Makes
it
the
does
season
make
bright.
The season bright.
That's
wow.
Right.
Awesome.
Okay, so does Lefse if you're Scandinavian.
Okay, there ain't
that's
no song about that.
No.
There is, I'm sure, in northern
that
Minnesota.
Nasty fish?
No, that's lutefisk. We don't eat that. That's nasty. Yeah. Okay. But Lefse is a potato pancake, and you butter it and then put brown sugar and roll it up, and it's just a good...
I'm going to have to go. Excuse me. Theodore's favorite Christmas food is milk.
Okay. That's good. With peppermint. Okay. What about the best gift you ever received? Or gave? I'll throw that in.
I got a bike when I was 12 years old. It was called the Bandit. And that was my all-time favorite Christmas gift.
Wait, was it really called the Bandit, or did you name it the Bandit?
No, it was Bandit.
Oh.
It was the Bandit. Steve, you remember that bike?
I don't remember
Come
the
on.
Bandit.
Come on.
I had a Murray that I got one year for Christmas that was a highlight.
Aw.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite. I do remember this one year that I got this great watch and got in a fight with my brother that night, and he broke it. That was, I mean, he was punching me, and I held up my arm to block myself, and he punched my new watch. So that was that kind
of... Oh, I'll think of another one. I got a Clemson University ring for Christmas a few years ago because I couldn't afford it when I graduated.
Whoa.
So that was awesome.
Oh, that's
nice.
Very cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do remember back in the 70s getting this thing that you can make, like, houses with. I mean, you got these things.
Lincoln Logs?
No, it wasn't Lincoln Logs. It was purely
Barbie
70s.
House?
It had this kind of modular thing, and then you could slap into the open box, like, faux brick or faux, you know, other kind of siding, so that you could make one of those modern houses that look cool in the 70s.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Is that like the Brady Bunch kit?
Right. You could make the Brady Bunch house.
Wow.
I'm sure.
Mine is probably, as I told Mr. and Mrs. Claus last week, that doll bed and dresser that was made for me was awesome. And, but my worst, I have had several worsts actually, but one of the worst was my mom during the Cabbage Patch craze decided she was going to make me a Cabbage Patch doll, which was actually like it looked like E.T. And like she made the head, but it was out of fabric. And so with the
she
neck,
thought it had to have cabbages inside.
No, she made it so it didn't even have a plastic head. It had like a fabric head, and around the neck, like it just all the fabric pulled.
It looked like a scarecrow.
Like
I bet you were proud to take that to school and show it off.
And she painted it on the eyes, and it just looked like demonic, like from that Chucky movie or whatever. It was totally scary.
Chucky.
And I opened it up, and my niece just started crying. She was just a baby when she saw it. Like it scared her. And I was like, whoa.
And so you tossed it into the cabbage patch.
Oh, no. I kept it, of course. So, but I just had to be the laughing stock of all my friends who had the real cabbage patches. So, whatever. So,
well, I remember this 1 year my mom bought us all matching sweaters. I have a twin brother and then an older brother. It's just 15 months older. So we're treated like triplets. And we got these matching sweaters that had to have been made of goat fingernails or something because... They were just the itchiest sweaters, and they would make us get up in church and wear them and sing these songs together. And they, I'm sure they thought it was festive, but that was a bad gift for us.
My least favorite gift just happened a couple of years ago. I got some gray sweats from my wife. You know, the thick kind, it cinch elastic at the bottom.
Yeah. Like that you get at Walmart for like $8. For,
maybe okay. less.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was a serious, real gift, and you know, she listens to this, she's just gonna have to hear it. Was not a good gift.
Well, did you confront her at the time, or is this gonna be like the first time she knows this?
Could be the first time.
Whoa.
Yeah, like, did she realize you didn't like him when she started seeing you washing the car maybe. With him?
Maybe she knows, because the only time I wear them is when it's really cold at night. So maybe a few times a year I wear it to bed.
Nice.
Or She because we live here in Colorado, she bought it for me to wear out to dinner, because that's what people wear out to dinner here. And then all I needed to add to it was a poo puff print. I'd fit right in there.
Oh my goodness, you have issues with people in the West. That is for sure. And well, as long as you wear them with squeaky clean white tennis shoes.
Yeah, white sneakers. You know, maybe sneakers. In the summer some jean shorts, some jorts. And a white T-shirt to go along with that, with a braid
like
belt.
Like those painter shorts that have like the loops on them. Oh, those are awesome. Wow. You know what? You should give those to my brother-in-law, because my brother-in-law asks for sweats every year.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
He loves sweats, yeah. And he just wears them until they're disgusting. So sometimes to church. It just depends. So.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm.
For today's culture segment, we are back with Mark Hall of Casting Crowns. For those of you fans of The Boundless Show, you heard Casting Crowns when they were here in Colorado not long ago in our studio. Well, not long ago. My goodness, it was back in the spring at this point, I think. Wasn't it?
Right. I do remember that.
Do you remember coming to Colorado?
I remember. Yes, I do.
Because it's your new favorite state.
It was beautiful that day, and it was a cool day.
Good. Well, we are so excited to have you back with us. Casting Crowns, their album, actually they have their first Christmas album. It is called Peace on Earth, and it released on October 7th. So we want to make sure that you all know about that first and foremost. And we're going to talk about that a little bit here. And I just want to start, Mark, by saying you actually have a quote here that was provided to me about the album, and it says, "I want to see people rediscover the worship that Christmas songs have in them. A lot of times when we sing carols, we sort of shift into Christmas carol mode, singing songs that we've been singing for so long, we might not be hearing what they're really saying." What really is your take on that, and how do you think that your album is a response to that?
Well, you know, I think even hymns are the same way. The songs that you've been singing since you were a kid, you start sort of hearing more the moment of, oh, this is a Christmassy song and this is a Christmassy moment. And you can sort of miss the lyric and what the writer was saying and what he was really going through. Like, "O Little Town of Bethlehem," I didn't really discover until I started rearranging the chords that the whole song was about the fact that Bethlehem slept through the first Christmas. I never really gathered that. It's just a neat little Christmas song about Bethlehem for me. And I think sometimes when you change things or come at them from a little different way musically, sometimes it'll relaunch the entire idea that the whole thing started with. And that's our goal. I think we can miss the worship sometimes in Christmas music. And it's definitely there. There's definitely an atmosphere where we can worship and thank God for him coming the way he did.
Mm-hmm. That's what my actually favorite carol is, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, for that reason.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a basic summary of the entire gospel if you sing all the verses. That kind of irritates me too when people like skip a verse. They're like,
oh, no.
Sing verses 1 and 4 and you like miss half the story. Okay,
that's
so
right.
Right. So talk to us about Peace on Earth. What really kind of prompted you to make that album, and then what are you hoping to really bring into the Christmas season through that music?
Well, Peace on Earth really came from what we've just been talking about. There was a song called I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day. It's a song that I've been hearing since I was a kid, and it sort of just wasn't on my radar as much as other songs. I didn't really know where it came from or who wrote it. And while spending some time with the lyrics, realized it was a poem by Longfellow. And Longfellow wrote this poem during the Civil War. And was going through such a tumultuous time as a country. There was struggle in his family. He just lost his wife in that season. And going through such a dark time. And then these Christmas bells are ringing at this church nearby. And for years growing up, the Christmas bells reminded him that there's peace on earth. But this was a time for him where he was struggling with these bells, because the bells say there's peace on earth, and he knows what God's word says about being peace on earth. But then he's looking at what's going on in his life, and he's thinking, there's no peace. There's hate, and there's war, and there's all these dark things. And in him sort of working out his salvation with fear and trembling, as the word says, and just dealing with what he knows to be true and what he's seeing in his life, he starts realizing that God really is in control, and the peace is in me because God is in me. And that song really sort of just was reborn to me. And when we recorded it, you won't hear a bell in the song anywhere. And we replaced the idea of the bells ringing with children singing. Because I think when you hear kids sing, you think hope and there's future. And that's what the bells were telling him. And the peace on earth idea comes from that song. And to me, what that means is we may live in time where there is darkness. You know, we may be going through storms in our lives and struggles of our own, and see things on the news and on television and at the banks and all the places we're doing business, that there's all these things crashing in. But there's peace on earth because the people of God are here. And Jesus said, you know, he said, you're going to deal with trouble, but I've overcome the world, and I've given you a peace that the world can't give. And that is a peace that the people at school that I go to school with need to see. The people I work with need to see. The people out in the world aren't going to see on a picket sign, you know, but they will see it through the love that I show them. And that's where they'll find peace.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that as we look at, I think there's a danger, especially among Christians, to approach Christmas each year as just, you know, we have the stereotype of the Norman Rockwell or Courier and Ives situation. And we know that we're, you know, in a struggling economy now. We're, you know, surrounding an election that's going to be quite divisive. Mm-hmm. We actually, you know, are dealing with a lot of issues as a nation, as well as issues around the world and whatnot. And I think it is valuable to keep, you know, at its core some of these messages that really, right. You know, is Jesus Christ the hope of the world? And do we really believe that? Now, I know that you all, we learned this about you the last time you were here, that you as a band are really passionate about discipleship and about the role of the local church in that. How do you find a balance for that? You know, not only as you're out on the road, but how do you see kind of that role being played out in your music itself, and what kind of stories have you heard from that end? And then how do you individually make sure that you are pouring into others as a person, as well as, you know, receiving that yourself?
Well, I'm currently a youth pastor in Atlanta. I've been on staff at Eagles Landing First Baptist in South Atlanta for 7 years. I've been a youth pastor for 17. I believe the songs that we sing come from the ministry in our churches over the years. So our touring is really geared more Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday through Wednesday. I'm in the schools. I'm in FCAs and Bible clubs and one-on-one discipleship with students and parents, and just really involved in what we do at our church. And parenting is such a part of student ministry that we're partnering with these moms and dads and seeing the fruit that comes from relationship. I believe you have to earn the right to speak truth into people's lives for true discipleship to really happen. So just from day-to-day friendships with teenagers and moms and dads, we're able to let them see through our lives, not just through our teaching in our songs, that Jesus is not life enhancement, but that he's life. And so these songs that we write come from moments and victories and struggles that we're all having as believers, as well as what we're seeing happen in everybody every day.
Do you find it hard to remain kind of present in those situations and attached? I mean, given, I think many of our folks would know that, you know, you guys, I think, are the top-selling Christian music artists right now in the industry, and you do tour a lot. You've got, a bunch of singles that have been out in the past and are still out there. How do you just really kind of remain, I think that it's just like the secular or industry speak would be, how do you remain grounded? You know, that's like what they would ask Miley Cyrus, but
right.
how do you do that? I mean, because it seems a little bit unattainable to some of us who are just normal people.
Well, I don't know. I never see myself as anything maybe less than normal. Mm-hmm. I mean, we get on a bus on Wednesday after church and we get to go sing to people, but the people that I go home to, I get off the bus on Sunday morning to lead worship at our church, and I get snubbed by a middle schooler, and it's right back to the real world, you know? Mm-hmm. So the grounding thing, I don't know. I don't know how you could let that get to your head as far as, the Lord connecting with a person through a song that he let me write. I don't know how the focus could get off, but I think just for every day, just being a man, what I've got to do to stay grounded is guard my time in the Word every day and understand that I can't lean on other people's walk with Jesus. I can't lean, as much as I can be fed by my pastor, I can't lean on his faith. I've got to have my own. And that happens from guarding my time with God, delighting myself in the law of the Lord every day, and understanding that my enemy's coming after that time with God. He wants that. Because if Satan can get my time away from God, things are going to get a little gray, and then I'm going to start slipping. And then it's going to start getting easier and easier to fall. And we've all been there before. So I guess just not wanting to go back to that place makes me guard that time even more.
Right. And I think that's a great reminder for those of us who are young adults in today's culture, just because we would often say, your life as a Christian music artist is so tumultuous, but really Satan tries to steal the time away from people working in mortgage companies and people working at ministries and everywhere. So that's valuable. I did want to ask you too, getting back to Peace on Earth.
Right.
You know, I think a lot of people see Christmas albums as a great way, maybe folks who don't know the Lord or who have no interest in spiritual things will buy a Christmas album, where they won't go and buy an album, you know, that's maybe titled Jesus is the Answer, so buy this album. what really would be your prayer for this work, and how do you see, or what do you hope will be accomplished as we head into the new year?
You know, I think Christmas is that one strategic time of the year where it doesn't matter what you believe, you're going to think about Jesus during that season, and you're going to know that this is where it all really comes from and what it's all about, and we can run away from it as much as we want, but it's still on our minds. And hearing traditional songs will sometimes catch our ear and tie to our childhood, even though we don't really believe any of that or we're running from that. So I guess my prayer is that when they hear these songs, hearing them in a little different way, will reintroduce the idea that God is not a book And Jesus isn't just this idea out there that we can visit once a year, but that he wants to know me and wants to live in me and live through me. And there's a friendship that can be had there. That's what I want them to see. We don't need any more, you know, onward Christian soldiers. We just need people that know Jesus and walk with him every day. And I hope that relationship with God is what's coming through in these songs and this record and when we travel and sing to them in concerts.
That's true. And I think that, you know, as we've said before here on the Boundless Show, those who are young adults probably have some of the best chances of reaching their own peers as they are, you know, whether at college or graduate school or in the workplace now, they have inroads to that demographic that many don't. And so we always encourage folks to be out there and to be living life in a way that is real and a way that is, you know, infused with Jesus Christ and the hope that only he offers. And we are so glad that there are folks like Casting Crowns out there to kind of be, you know, be at the forefront of that, I would say, and be doing what you do best, but through the lens of our faith. So, well, again, the album is Peace on Earth, and you guys all the best on the tour, and we will certainly be in prayer for you as you do that.
Thank you for letting us be a part of your show, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Thanks, Mark.
Oh, come all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant. Oh, come ye to Bethlehem. Come and behold him, born the King of angels. Oh, come, let us adore him. Oh, come, let us adore him. Oh, come, let us adore him, Christ the
John Thomas is back for this week's The Hungry Years to tell us about an encounter with Emmanuel, God with us.
Now, one of the great disappointments of my life is that my brothers and sisters and I never became a singing group like the Partridge Family. It isn't because we were undiscovered prodigies who never got our break. It is because we have not a morsel of musical talent among the six of us. Now, what are the odds of that? You can't walk to your car these days without running into an American Idol finalist. Yet out of half a dozen fairly well-adjusted people, eight if you throw in Mom and Dad, none of us could so much as play I Dropped My Dolly in the Dirt on the piano. As a service to the global community, my family never sings publicly. You're thinking, oh, now, come on, it can't be that bad. No, you are wrong. It is that bad. I've heard us. And my own musical handicap is never more obvious than during the holidays, which feature multiple gatherings of public singing. Christmas songs beg to be sung out loud, passionately, by everyone within range. And many of them are written simply with me in mind, so that even the worst of the worst can join in with the others. Yeah, but even then, I have to hold down the volume so as to preserve the peace and goodwill of the season. Yeah, about the only place I can really let it rip is in the confines of my car. And so it was last Tuesday when I was driving down the interstate. Listening to B.B. Winans, I launched into O Come All Ye Faithful. It's a carol I've always enjoyed, but no more than any of the others. But on this occasion, something happened. Yea, Lord, we greet thee, born this happy morning. Jesus, to thee be all glory given. Word of the Father, now in flesh appearing. Now, I'm not one to stuff my emotions. I'll get a little choked up on appropriate occasions, but I wouldn't describe myself as overly emotional. Something started forming in my throat, though, as B.B. and his echoing choir began the chorus, O come, let us adore him. O come, let us adore him. O come, let us adore him. I joined in and let loose. Christ, Christ, yes, Christ, Christ the Lord. B.B. and his choir and I had worked ourselves into a fever pitch. We were all yelling by this point. Well, the song ended and I exited the interstate. I made a few turns and managed to pull into the parking lot of a local business, my errand destination. I looked at myself in the rearview mirrors. My eyes were red. My face was bloodshot. I sat there for a moment and tried to gather myself. What in the world was that? I can only explain what happened as the manifest presence of God's Spirit. It was quite simply a gift that at that moment I was neither seeking nor necessarily expecting. He just opened my eyes. I was filled with a mixture of peace, of joy, and awe, a microscopic slice of heaven. I sat in the parking lot thinking, why? Why would such a thing happen so unexpectedly in such an ordinary moment? What was different about this moment than any other moment? And then I thought of those shepherds just out there in the fields, just tending their flocks, going about their ordinary lives on a night no different from any other, when suddenly God's angel stood among them and God's glory blazed around them. They were terrified. Don't be afraid. I'm here to announce a great and joyful event that is meant for everybody worldwide. A Savior has just been born in David's town, a Savior who is Messiah and Master. And they will call him Emmanuel, God with us. He is with us in fields and stables. He is with us in classrooms and offices and homes and malls and grocery stores and hospitals. And right there on the interstate, I had experienced the best gift I would receive all season long, the gift of Emmanuel's presence.
Here we are with this week's Inbox, and I'm in the studio with Candace. Welcome, Candace.
Thanks, Lisa. Always nice to be here.
Okay, we have a question from another female, and let's go ahead and jump into it because it's a good one. She says, I am not a people person. A couple of years ago, I was convicted about my antisocial nature, but being in groups is still not a natural process. So now that I'm conscious of the effort I'm making, I'm having difficulty with another friend of mine who is female. She is bubbly in nature, always has something to say, and just makes people feel at ease. In any group situation, people are naturally drawn to her, and when we go out with mixed groups, guys just gravitate towards her. To add to this, she is incredibly beautiful, and while I commend my brothers for seemingly looking past this, when in groups, her personality shines through, and I can see their interest slowly growing. She's currently talking to a guy, and they have hopes of one day dating, but are in the process of getting to know each other. So I know that she's not looking for a potential mate in this group of friends, and that she is genuinely interested in these men as brothers. My question is, what can I do in this situation to stand out? And then Kepi goes on just to say that she feels like she has a lot of warped thinking in her past and stuff, and she wants to get past that and not have it be a competition. So how can we help her?
Well, if you light your hair on fire, the guys will notice. No, I do.
And just if you just tear this other girl down, I mean, that will just get you. It'll just move you leagues. Trust me.
You know, I feel the anxiety and angst of the situation because I wouldn't say that I was ever antisocial or a wallflower, but I certainly felt, and I think most women have felt, overshadowed at times by other women who are prettier, smarter, funnier, whatever the is. And so the first thing to do is to stop comparing yourself to the other women in the room, because you're always going to find someone who's better than you on what you're comparing, and you're always going to find someone who's less than you. And either way, you know, you're either going to wind up in pride or wind up in envy. So either way, you're winding up in sin. So Take your eyes off the other women in the room. Keep your gaze on the Lord. And try to be genuinely friendly to these men. And, you know, don't try to win the guy you know you don't have a shot at. You know, I mean, Ken and Barbie usually end up together, and that's a good thing because their looks cancel each other out. And, you know, if someone's hilarious, he's probably going to end up with a woman who either laughs at every single joke he tells or is equally funny. So let those couples that are just obvious pairs pair off. Find someone who's an obvious pair with you. Find someone who maybe isn't so outgoing or who might be a little bit shy. I guarantee that guy is not looking at your friend thinking, I'm going to date her. Because he knows in his heart she's not going to say yes to him because they're not an equal match. You really want to kind of find someone who you would be a good fit with.
Yeah, Kepi, I would say two things. One, you mentioned in the front end of your question that you have trouble being social. But, you know, oftentimes we stereotype ourselves with stuff like that. There are things that you know, and there are things that you're good at, and there are talents that you have, and conversation things where you would be the expert in them. And I would definitely focus on those. That, you know, get maybe practice being in social situations, and practice, if you're taking Candace's advice and not focusing on other people in the room, specifically other women in the room, and comparing yourself, you can spend more time concentrating on truly being interested in other people and in what they have to say, and in responding to that from your own experience and from your own knowledge and your own interests. The second thing that I would say is, while I agree with Candace that, you know, oftentimes like will attract like, and you can gravitate towards people that you know you would be a good match with and a good fit with, sometimes you would be surprised at how interesting couples get together.
Well, that's true.
I just had two friends who got married, and I have known him probably for 8 or 9 years and have maybe said 10 minutes of conversation with him in that entire time span. And honestly, unless it was about snowboarding or South Dakota, I could not get a word out of him. And now he married her, and she's Miss Extrovert, bubbly, whatever. And all of a sudden he just came alive, and he's this new person around her. And so a match that we never thought would have happened. And so I think there are just a lot of, I just always say, and my friends and I have just agreed, when we've seen people pair off and get married, how in the world did they get together? You know, and they're just interests, you know, just different interests and different things, you know, God leading and whatever. I think there's always hope. So,
well, and the other thing is try to, and maybe you need to pray for the grace to do this, try to take the focus off yourself. And you know what it's like to feel socially awkward. You know what it's like to have a shy moment. Look around the room and see who else in the room, male or female, might be struggling with the social setting, and go up and talk to them and be genuinely interested in other people and ask questions, and just let the Lord lead you to someone who might need your friendship. And be thankful, too, that you have this social friend, because I suspect she's creating social opportunities for you that you might not have had otherwise. And it's okay to go along for the ride and let her sort of, you know, open the door and you follow and just kind of see what happens. But you don't have to spend every social opportunity with her. You also might want to forge some friendships with people who are a little more, you know, mellow. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, too.
Exactly. And I think, as we've said many times here on the show, God is in the business of making good matches. And I think this situation is not much different from, you know, if you've ever gone through a breakup and you've had to let someone go. I mean, it's the realization, you know, this is using my mom's cliche again, you ultimately just have to give it to the Lord. And God knows, you know, if you're keeping yourself open and available, mm-hmm. and you're working on yourself and all this stuff, I mean, you know, let's just talk about Candace's book again, Get Married, you know, go get it and figure out what to do. But honestly, I mean, God ultimately is in control. And, you know, if you're being obedient and doing your part, you know, it really is in his hands, and he knows who's the best fit for mm-hmm. you. And I think we try too often to manipulate situations, and we get all crazy, and we're just going to drive ourselves to tears.
Well, and you can find solace in the fact that your friend can't marry every guy in the group.
Right.
She can only eventually pair off with one. And so I do think the temptation is to be totally stressed out when you see a stunning woman walk in and all the guys' heads turn. But you know, and she knows, and they know that they're not all going to win her. And you can just kind of relax with that knowledge. And like Lisa said, just say, Lord, show me who you want me to focus on.
Mm-hmm. And when you're in those social settings, just try to feed her cookies, make her gain a few pounds, whatever. I mean, just, she won't even notice.
That's bad advice. She won't even eat them. That's the problem.
Because she's too busy being social and fantastic. Oh, can't stand it. No, just kidding. All right. Well, Candace, that's been helpful. And hopefully that has been helpful to Kepi as well. So as always, we want your questions. Write to us, editor@boundless.org, and we will attempt to answer them here. And we will be doing so in full force in the new year. So keep them coming in so we can sort through them and start helping you out. So that is it for this week's show. We will be around next week, of course, and we hope to see you around here as well.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas. Yep. It's okay to say it. I bought my mom an It's Okay to Say It button to put in her stocking, because it is. It's okay to say it. Merry Christmas, everyone. I hope you have a fantastic time of rest and celebration as we look back at the birth of Christ, and more so to the hope that we have because of him.
Amen.
So that is it for this week's show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.